All right. Hey, welcome back to the JK Moto Podcast, a motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, and specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. All of it. Like, without a doubt.
Most of it.
You sit here so like, here we go. Anyway, we are brought to you this week by JK Moto Entertainment, which is your one-stop shop for your motorcycle track day and club racing questions and answers. Subscribe down on the YouTube channel. Also, go follow us on Facebook and Instagram at JK Moto Entertainment. Send us some DMs if you ever have any questions, or if you are interested in being on the show, it's a great place to get a hold of me is on Instagram. Once again, JK Moto Entertainment, send me a DM on why you should or should not be a guest in my show, and possibly get you on. Anyway, we've got MotoGP to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
Quite a weekend down in Austin, as they were saying, the live music capital of the world. Once again, this episode is not brought to you by Monster Energy, but if it was, I would say that this is a pretty good flavor.
Some would argue the best, but...
easy.
They are putting out some pretty good ones recently.
Yeah, there's been a lot of stuff. I was at work and I saw this blue one, Blue Pacific something or other. And I was, oh man, I almost stole it. I was hunting around trying to figure out whose it was because it was just sitting there. Finally found the guy. I was like, hey, is this yours? He's like, yeah. Dang it. But yeah, have yet to try that flavor. Got to figure it out. Anyway, we're getting sidetracked by Monster. Speaking of Monster Energy brought home a win this weekend. We'll leave it at that and get into the intro. And after the intro, we'll talk MotoGP.
My first track day, I got the pictures back, and I was like, I'm never doing that again. On the ground at 100 miles an hour.
We're back. On that note, is that how we're gonna bring us back now? That's how we're gonna come back. Oh man. All right, before we really get into the racing big time, we got to cover fantasy. How's your fantasy team doing?
You know, it's doing a lot better, but I'm still last place because I got to make up all that ground for the first couple races, but I think my team did pretty good this week.
Yeah, so I made some
changes. My new and improved team.
Okay, you also made changes?
Yeah.
Nice, nice. I made some changes myself. I was hoping those changes would do a lot for me, and they didn't. And, I am glad I didn't waste a boost this week. So
I wish I used a boost this week.
Interesting. All right. We'll get into your team in a second. Before we get into Kelly's team here, we do need to talk about our weekly point winner, which is, what do you know, the guy sitting in first place and probably going to be winning for a while. He must have a great team.
He's got to figure it out.
But he also actually tied with our second place guy, Camhead. So Shifty and Camhead both came in at 186 points. For this past week's GP, take a look at Shifty's team. He's got Mark Marquez, Alex Marquez up for the gold, and then Furman Aldeguer and Iagura for the silver with Ducati and Ducati Lenovo for the teams and manufacturers. So that kind of makes a lot of sense. Take a look down at Camhead's team. And yeah, it's exactly the same, which is why they got the same amount of points. That makes a lot of sense. So yeah, and then Shaky Moto, you're still hanging out in third place. I'm still pulling up fourth. We got a Sad Satellite down in fifth place, bringing in a pretty good amount of points, 160. And then a Kelly OJ all the way down in last place.
Man, someone's got to hold it down.
Yep. Currently only 212 points off the lead.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think that the manufacturers played a bigger role in the point total than I originally thought.
I'm starting to kind of think that.
Whereas
also,
at the beginning, I was like, what money do I have left over? What manufacturers can I afford? But it should be thinking the other way around.
Yeah, so I'm going to make a rider swap, and I might make a, if I can, I'll make a team swap. I already made a constructor swap, which was a good choice that helped me out.
I think
a lot,
you get two trades, so you got to make sure that's what you want.
I should be able to. It just depends on if I have the money or not. So
I made both my trades already. So I'm locked in.
Locked in already for the next one. And we are headed to, I guess I still need my phone up. And I apologize, we're going to be doing a lot of phone work here. I'm not sitting in front of the computer anymore. That's because we're out in the studio, which this is not the studio.
Stable B?
This is Stable B, baby. And just a quick plug. If you're not following the YouTube channel, if you're listening, go check out the YouTube channel, JK Moto Fan Entertainment Fantasy. Sorry, I read fantasy for a second there. JK Moto Entertainment. Throw a subscribe when you get over there. But this is Stable B. This is where we hang out all the time on JK Moto Entertainment. And I will be doing a kind of stable tour slash history lesson, we'll put it, coming up here soon. Just kind of pulling out all the bikes and going through the different bikes and why we have each bike.
How many stables are we at? Stable A, Stable B?
Technically, that's it.
That's it?
And then the Rolling Stable Studio.
Okay.
Which is the bus. Yeah. I don't know. Stable B is, I don't know. The name just fit. And she'll be around the stage. She might change her look.
Stop that on a t-shirt, Stable B.
Yeah, there we go. But yeah, anyway, like I said, here in the next coming weeks, probably 1 or 2 weeks out, one of our Monday videos will be just a quick little tour down of all the different bikes that I have, when I got them, why I got them, where they're at, kind of a little history run for you guys. So got a suggestion of doing that, and I like the suggestion, so we'll make it happen. But I was about to talk about when our next race is in MotoGP. I don't want to just jump ahead, but we are headed to Qatar in 2 weeks. So usually the season opener in the past, and that'll be round four this year, which is kind of different, but kind of cool. So anyway, Circuit of the Americas, what a track.
Yeah.
And what a weird, so it's almost always round three. It used to be Qatar and then Argentina and then Circuit of the Americas.
Yeah, well, like this year it was not that. What was it, Thailand, then Argentina, then Qatar?
Circuit of the Americas, yep. And now Qatar coming up. But yeah, you know, I was thinking about it because the story goes that Marquez is the king of the rodeo or whatever. I don't know, the cowboy, the guy.
They did say that quite a few times this weekend.
So, and he does have one of the most impressive records for racing in America, period. But looking back, it's been a while since he won a race in COTA. Like, it's been a hot minute.
I'd argue that he was doing really good last year before he crashed out.
Yeah, he was, but then he crashed out. I would argue he was doing really good this year.
You just gotta ignore that real quick. Ignore it.
We'll talk about that later. But, you know, it sucks because since I've been watching MotoGP, 2019 was the first year I watched. Marc Marquez has not won in America since I've started watching.
It's like 7 years now?
Six? This will be the sixth year. Yeah. So it's a little rough, like, as a fan.
2019, not 2018, yeah.
To be, you know, watching your home track for your country and you European guys that are like, well, what are you talking about? I have six tracks in my country. Anyway.
Must be nice.
Yeah, but to have your guy and then to have him not win, but have them say the whole weekend that he's the king of the track. He's the king. He's got this amazing track record here. He loves it so much. He's the only one that can figure it out. And COTA is like something else, dude. If you my only experience with COTA is in a video game. That's where I'm getting that it's something else from. But like watching them ride it after playing a little bit of the video game and then also understanding like what a racetrack is. If you've done a track day, you can kind of piece together a little bit what COTA is. But yeah, and then you talk to club racers that have raced on it, and they all hate it.
Yeah, they all hate it, yeah.
You talk to half of the MotoGP field, they hate it. Half of Moto America hates it. Like, everyone hates it, which the only reason that I would argue with anyone, and I haven't ridden it yet, so I imagine I get down there and I also hate it, but my argument would be that a racetrack's job is to be difficult. Like, it's supposed to be difficult to get around the racetrack. So theoretically, the more difficult it is, the better of a racetrack it is.
The more difficult it is, it would also reward you more for figuring it out.
Exactly, right? And then you get some genius baby alien guy that's sponsored by Estrella Galicia or whatever, I don't know. And he figures it out better than anyone else has and then still can't freaking finish a race for 5-6 years.
Still tricky, you know?
Yeah. Anyway, we're not going to dwell on that too much. What we are going to dwell on is the race start. But before we get there, I did want to touch a little bit on weather because we saw some kind of crazy Coda weather.
The day of the race?
Yeah.
That?
Right? So that's what's nuts because normally Coda, in my experience, is either just hot and sunny all weekend long and like that's it.
Or, Texas weather, standard.
Yeah, or in the morning, it's like a little rainy, cloudy, foggy kind of and cold and you're like, ooh, I don't know. This weekend we came in, Friday, we had rain, which that threw some people off, right? Mark being one of them, ended up, you know, going off. Saturday, blistering hot, but because the rain came in, that gets rid of all the rubber in the asphalt, so half the grip's gone. So we didn't see any new lap records. We didn't see, and we saw times climbing all of Saturday, right, all the way through the sprint, as there was more grip level. What we also saw was during the sprint, and certain rider in a certain turn, I think it was 18, lost some grip where he shouldn't have normally. And was talking about, you know, we'll have to keep an eye on that for tomorrow. And that was mostly probably due to the amount of rain they had, washing all that rubber out, and then it just getting hotter and hotter and hotter. That's something that, you know, a better team, not just a better rider, but a better team altogether is going to be able to work their way through that better. So, and then insert Sunday weather. So did you watch the race live?
I did not watch the race live. I watched a recording.
Okay.
So did I. And it was I was busy Sunday, obviously. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of action. I saw that, you know, a lot of last minute grid tire changes. I watched Quartararo like crash out in the formation. Like the sighting lap.
Yeah, the sighting lap. Yep.
Then I watched that weird scramble between then they just switched bikes and then everybody gridded up and then there was like another scramble at the last minute. Everybody like most of the grid got off the grid after they saw Mark Marquez and a few other choice people. Mm-hmm. It's like Mark went, Pekka was like, he got half the grid's like, we'll go.
Yeah, it was red, red, blue, blue. Like,
yeah, people sit in the grid like, who chose what we later realized was the right tire choice? Just sit on the grid like, delayed race start? What is this?
Yeah.
And like, there was no penalties or anything, like no point deduction, no nothing for that.
So
I'm not sure what the procedures is for that, but I do think that's wild that they all like changed the last minute in such a way that delayed the race start.
Yeah, no, and we'll go ahead and cover that because when I was watching that same thing, I was watching a recording, and usually, like, if I'm watching a recording, half the time I try and just skip to, like, race start. I'm very glad I didn't.
That's what I try to do, and I was like, I fast-forward somebody crashed, I fast-forward the grid was empty, I was like, wait a minute, I had to run it back, I had to rewind it back, I was like, I don't know what's going on, but I need to see this.
I gotta see it all, yeah, but it was some drama, so if you're, if you haven't watched yet, I don't know what you're doing. We don't need to say that we spoil things because everyone knows that here. But
surprise, surprise.
Yeah, if you haven't seen that whole race start situation. Anyway, what happened was they went out for the sighting lap. There was rain. So some of the riders went out on rains. Some went out on slicks. They went out on the sighting lap. It was rainy. It's a sighting lap. It shouldn't really matter for a rider at that level. You should be able to come around and be okay. Quartararo couldn't quite figure it out or had a miss up somewhere.
Well, he went out on slicks in the rain.
Yeah, which I get it. There's slicks in the rain. I want to do it, but I've seen like Morbidelli finish a race on slicks in the rain.
I've seen Brad Binder do it too.
Yeah, right.
I'll keep saying that.
So it's doable. And if it's a sighting lap and you're at that caliber of rider at that, I feel like you should be able to figure it out. But I'm not mad at him. I get it. Right. I'm not trying to say he's a crappy rider or anything like that. Anyway, so we get to the grid and we're all trying to figure out what we're going to do. And the rain says, I'm done here.
All right, I'm going to head out.
And rain so then, the but it's like, it's still cloudy. You still got like some kind of fog. They throw in some Texas Houston cheerleaders, I think, came down and everyone's like doing the cool Texas stuff. And the fans are like, yeah, everything's great. This is going to be a great day. And the riders are just like, team, what are we doing? And the team's like, rider, what are we doing? So they're just sitting there trying to figure out a bike.
There was a lot of look of confusion from different people to their teams, even before like that last minute grid scrambles. Like they were coming from the side and like, Blake.
Yeah. So fast forward a little bit to the end, we think we're good to go, right? Everyone was swapping parts on the bike, swapping bikes, swapping tires, swapping this, swapping that, and getting everything ready. And the first six people on the grid are on rains because they're assuming it's about to rain. Now, there's a certain person that likes to play some mind games. He was on rains. He also set the pace for the entire weekend. He set the pace for all of MotoGP in 2025. Approximately 20 seconds, maybe, probably more like 45 to a minute before the last time that you're okay to do it at. He never actually got back on the bike. He's standing next to his bike, and he just takes off. You see him just run off to the pits, and then all of a sudden, Bagnaia's off his bike running off. Alex Marquez is off his bike running off. All three behind them, off their bikes running off. Or I guess Fabio, DJ, and Antonio, he's running off. Everyone's running off. the last guy left on the grid, because all the guys are bringing the bikes back in too. Like, everyone's just like, the grid is just erupts in madness, which is insane. Last guy left on the grid is freaking Luca Marini, who would now be in first place, is what the commentator said. They hadn't done the warm-up lap yet. So if you have bike issues on the warm-up lap, but you can come back and finish the warm-up lap before the safety car, I believe you still start from your normal position, or you start from the back of the grid. One of those two. And I would have to look up exactly. But essentially what should have happened was that all those people that went to the pits and grabbed their rain bikes or their dry bikes lined up at the pits like they did, and they should have called the race
from there.
The warm-up lap from there, right? And then all those people would have come back around, and whatever order they exited the pits is where they would line up on the grid. So the grid lineup might be a little weird, a little interesting, but that's where they would line up, in the back of the grid. What happened, and this is where a little bit of my opinion comes in from what I saw, was that there was one rider out there that didn't have a bike but had himself out on the grid when they should have been waving the flag for the race warm-up.
Really? I missed that.
Which was Maverick Vinales.
I remember them saying he didn't have a bike. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So a bunch of people ran in, a bunch of people still staying out, and then they say, hey, Maverick doesn't even have a bike. And you see Maverick on the grid running around, no bike, and they're about to start a warm-up lap. That, I believe, is why the red flag was actually called, because that is the point where it's like, okay, hey, this is unsafe. We can't do this. So they call a red flag. What happens then? Everyone gets another sighting lap. They come around. It's a quick little delayed start thing. We go down to 19 laps. We do another warm-up lap, race start, and we're off 19 laps instead of 20. So that's the story of the wild freaking wet, dry rain start in COTA this year. It was insane. But yeah, in my opinion, I think it was, a lot of people are blaming Mark, right? They want Mark to be penalized. What he did is technically perfectly fine.
If what he did is legal, it's legal.
Yeah, it's perfectly legal. It's within the rules. All the other riders that followed him, they're all within the rules. I think even Maverick Vinales, technically, as long as he got off the grid right then and there, which he did, I think he technically.
So this team, did his team take his bike and he was still on the grid?
Yeah.
What, if they bring the new one out?
Yeah. So okay. I think, I didn't catch it. I don't know if he was like in the pits.
I'll have to watch the replay.
Or what, but he went out to the grid or was on the grid, and then you just see him like, where's my bike?
What are we,
doing? There's no bike there.
What are we doing? We don't know.
Just crazy, because then he couldn't get his bike started for the actual race start, so he still had to pull off for the race start and then start from the pits anyway. And then, yeah, so terrible weekend for Maverick, terrible weekend for KTM altogether.
It's like karma. A good weekend last year, bad weekend this year. Net, no weekend.
No weekend, just doesn't exist. No coulda weekend for Maverick. It was rough. KTM in general, a little rough. But anyway, that was the race start. I don't want to dwell on that too much, but that's kind of my take on it and what I saw and what I think the truth is. But should we go through the sprint? That was a hell of a sprint.
I did enjoy the sprint.
It a lot.
Bagnaia, both Marquezes in the order that we've been seeing. Marquez, Bagnaia, 1, 2, 3. But the VR46s for the 4-5, mm-hmm. They had a really good weekend this weekend.
They did.
Both DG and Morbidelli. Quartararo in sixth.
DG and Antonio, dude. He cracked me up. He took that third place on Sunday.
That interview? I loved that interview.
Yeah.
I loved it.
He's just spurting out F-bombs. Doesn't care.
I'm super effing tired. I need to go drink 200 beers. I'm like,
yeah, I'm gonna
hell go, yeah, brother.
I'm going to go drink 150, maybe 200 beers in town and DG is back. Yeah. DG is back.
None of that first place hot dog talk. Let's do the victory beers talk. That's where it's at.
He had zero, like, that to me was a, like, I just get paid to race. That's it.
See, I didn't think I'd get this far.
Yeah, I'm just here to race, man. That was awesome. Yeah. But, they did great. So the biggest part of the sprint, I came home and I watched that after work also, so I was watching the recording. Pecco surprised the crap out of me, because all weekend in practice, and he's always kind of a slow burn, which I hate. I don't hate it, but it has got to be hard.
We say slow burn, but I don't think so. He consistently displays really good results, and he brings the bike home. At least this year he has.
Okay, Last year, slow burn being like throughout the weekend.
Okay.
So like FP1, he's like lucky to be in the top 10.
Okay.
Practice, you're like hoping he makes Q2, and then in Q2, finally, he might qualify decent. And then in the race, he's got even more pace. Like, he slowly burns into like the fastest. Which is going to be annoying if you're a Pecco fan. I'm not, so I don't have to worry about it too much. But it is kind of annoying if you're, even if you're not a fan, because you're like, oh yeah, Pecco ain't got it this weekend.
That's how I felt about watching Bastianini last year. Is like he's there, and then oh no, late race, his pace is there. It's like ooh,
yeah,
okay,
yeah. Which we did see a little bit of that yesterday on Sunday.
Put my fantasy team this year off that alone.
There you go. That's not. I don't know. I'm worried about him. Worried about Bastianini, but. But yeah, so Pecco qualified in sixth. Not great, not bad, not great. So I just counted him off. I was like, Pecco's gonna be, he's gonna be bad again. What is interesting and kind of exciting is that he had a great weekend.
Yeah, he did.
Because he came out one during the sprint, right off the start, and he was first coming out of the first corner. Right, so he had a great start. Sixth is on the inside. I will say that like the start for Coda is weird and wild because you're barreling up a hill, first place starts on the outside, which is not a great place to be. You have to have like a good start because the inside line could easily get taken from you, which is exactly what happened to Mark. Also happened to Alex and all of them because, like I said, Pecco just came in and phew, there he is on the inside. And
well, that's first place you got there. It'd be a shame if someone stole it from you.
Yeah. But then we head into turns 2, 3, 4, headed through that kind of sector, and that's. He took him relatively straight line from what I'm told, from what you can kind of see there, which is such a weird, like, MotoGP bikes are so hard to compare to. This is what I'm used to.
Standard street bike.
I've also never ridden Coda. I'm not trying to say I'm an expert or anything like that. You guys all know that. Once again, this is an average motorcycle rider podcast. That's the whole point. But there are points in a racetrack where you try and take the straightest line possible, right? So if you have multiple turns, apparently turns 2, 3, and 4 through Coda are kind of like that. But then you watch MotoGP and they are literally like leaned all the way over, slamming that bike from one side to the other the whole way through there. So you're like, what do you mean
straight line
through that? Like what? No, that's not. But anyway, so then we had a whole bunch more action through there between Mark, Pecco, Alex a little bit, like all of them. And I was so excited. I thought it was going to be awesome. Was really hoping, and then it kind of settled out, and then we just had what we've been seeing for the past two weekends, which was Mark, Alex, Pecco, and it kind of settled. It was chilling like that for a little bit, from what I remember. Then it insert the back tire on Mark's bike.
Yeah, but he did a little Mark special for those of us who hadn't seen that in a while.
Yeah. For those of you that are new to MotoGP, you got a Mark Marquez special. I'd say Sunday you got another Mark Marquez special.
He didn't let up. Off throttle at all. He just rode it out.
Yeah.
Yep. It.
Yeah, it was nuts. So back tire kicked him out. Almost kicked him. Like, he was almost sent to the moon right
he was there. He was airborne.
Yeah. Rode it out. That brought Pecco and Alex right back in, but then he kind of stuffed him back down. Was good to go.
I was like, no, I'm still good for it.
Took home a first place, so we had a Mark, Alex, Pecco 1-2-3 per the standard. Which, nothing wrong with that. Great weekend. Great Saturday. I do think that start of that sprint gave Pecco an amount of confidence.
Absolutely.
And then Sunday, what happened to Pecco again, you could tell Pecco was, like, once again actually happy. I think that Pecco might be back in fighting mode now. We'll see.
We'll get a couple races. We'll see.
I kind of hope so. I kind of don't. I'm not a big Pecco fan. But I also feel bad for him to be, like, the king of Ducati and then to just be thrown under the rug.
And not even like a gradual turn. It was like, no. Mark shows up and is like, all right, he's putting up results.
Yeah, it was kind of instant. And who knows what's going on in the garage. I'm sure he's still got his team, but, you know, it's got to suck to be over there all the time and then now to be over here and looking over there and seeing
such a huge culture shift in the garage.
Right, so.
Possibly.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Davide Tardozzi and GG Deligna. I always get that mixed up with DG and Antonio. GG Deligna. You know, they give everyone congratulations. Deligna specifically is always looking at all of his bikes because he just cares about the bikes, supposedly.
Like, these are Ducatis in the grid.
Yeah.
They don't care the order. The grid, and then the podium.
But it's got to be tough. It's got to be tough. And especially knowing, like, with all the stuff that came out last year when they were trying to decide if he was going to be on the Lenovo team or not. And Pecco's like, I'd rather not. And then they're like, well, we're gonna. Yeah. And then you see all these videos of like Davide Tardozzi looking at Mark and calling him a specimen and all this other. Anyway, It's gonna be rough.
Factual, because he is factual
yeah.
statement.
Yeah, he is something else. But
certified about that life.
Yeah,
he's really like that.
Anyway, let's see. Joan Mir, we gotta knock him out. And I mean that almost quite literally because he crashed in the sprint and he crashed in the race.
He did the thing.
So what's sad is that he was
cooking
for a possible top five, at least top 10, because Luca Marini finished in eighth in the race. And in the sprint, I think he did pretty okay in the sprint. Yeah, eighth in the sprint as well. So perfect. And then Zarco crashed out on Sunday also. He was very mad because he was cooking for a sixth place.
Hondas have been doing really good this year compared to their previous year's performances.
Hondas have been doing a lot better this year. Yeah.
Maybe that's the phrasing I should have used.
I want to say really good. You know, from 2013 to 2019, minus 2014, they took the championship every year.
That's fair.
So
for my limited MotoGP experience, I've seen Honda consistent backmarker. And now it's like Hondas can fight for top 10, sometimes even up there or top 5. And it's
Well, and, you know, it does go to show that there were some people that were saying that if Mark was on the Honda, current Mark on current Honda probably could have won a championship this year, which I'm like, whatever. It's not even worth talking about in my head. I do think that Koda specifically, for some odd reason, agrees with Hondas pretty well. So we saw Alex Rins win back there. Koda, I think Koda is just one of those tracks that, like, we see some weird winners coming out.
True.
Like, Bastianini won, Rins won, Marquez has won there a lot.
Vinales last year.
And then Vinales, and now this year, Bagnaia won, which I think might be his first time winning there. So, but it generally brings out some kind of, like, weird ones. Like, if there was someone that's going to win one race in the whole season that's not their home track, Koda will be that track.
Yeah, Koda also, like, will capitalize on mistakes, so, like, a bunch of weird crash outs keep happening here.
Yeah, the hardest part, which they were bringing up all weekend, for the Yamahas especially, is that freaking back straight, which is...
No, they just don't have the power compared to what Ducati's in the, I think, the KTMs.
Yeah. Well, and even the Aprilias, honestly. Like, Yamaha just doesn't have it. Probably even the Hondas. Like, they just don't have it. And
don't tell me that.
That back straight. Dude, that back straight is nuts.
It's humbling.
It is, I think, the fastest in MotoGP right now, if I remember right. Someone, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, throw it down in the comments. I'm all about it. But yeah, then the VR46 guys taking up third and fourth. DG, like we're kind of talking about, his podium speech. I'd love to see it. Also, he had some really good late pace coming in, which was cool. Morbidelli, pretty good weekend. I think he's getting more and more confident, which is good. And then Jack Miller, surprisingly, was able to pull off a fifth place.
During the race, actually.
For the race. The sprint, he was down in 14th, but for the race, he was in...
For the sprint, shout out to Iagor for getting that last point for the sprint.
Yeah, well, I'm happy about that because he's on my fantasy team.
Say?
Yeah, he did pretty good.
Yeah.
Quartararo had a great day Saturday, a rough day Sunday, because he had that wreck Sunday morning, or not Sunday morning, but right before the race in a sighting lap. That's gotta suck. Can you imagine, like...
Running back to the grid or trying to get your bike going so you can get a work, like a not that bike?
Not even that, as much as just, like, you are a MotoGP racer. You are one of the top 22 people or whatever in the world. You've also won a world championship. That's one of, like... seven people that are alive right now, I think, that have won a MotoGP World Championship. Maybe I'm making that number is completely made up, but not many.
It is a
people,
larger number,
right? Like,
yeah,
not many people can say that. And to wreck on a sighting lap, like, there's no, you're not trying to get your tires warm. You're not. The whole point of a sighting lap is just to go see the track conditions. You could walk the bike. There's no, like, legal requirements for how long you have to do it. There's no...
Yeah, but you're also trying to figure out, like, where do you have the grip? How much do you have?
Yeah, but, like, not really. It's a sighting lap to see what the track conditions are, because you're going to make your judgment on, like, okay, what tires do I want? Do I want to make any last-minute brake changes? Do I need to...
I feel like anybody can make mistakes. I'm also very biased.
Yeah, I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying, like, that's gotta get in your head. There's no way that doesn't just sit in your head. And I think it did on Sunday. I think it threw him off a little bit because He was fighting real good on Saturday. He was trying to fight on Sunday, but the fight was just not there as much, I think.
Fair enough.
So, and then we have to talk about the one that I don't want to talk about.
I'll just bring it up. Hey, remember that time Mark Marquez was in the lead by like 2 seconds,
mm-hmm.
and then he wasn't?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, do you remember that time that Mark Marquez rode multiple laps around Cota without a right foot peg? And if he didn't know it, you might not even notice.
Fair enough. My question is this. Did he come in because he got called in, or did he came in? Because I thought he was going to come in as soon as like they showed you like missing foot peg and the damage. I thought he was got on the bike to ride it back into the pits. But then he like went past the pits.
Yeah, so
he did that for a few laps too.
So one of my...
What was that?
One of my favorite things about Mark Marquez, and one of the biggest reasons that I'm a fan, is that he, of all riders, will do everything that he can to get back on the bike and finish the race. And that is because he is extremely smart, and especially yesterday, if you red flag a race, you all come in, and then you restart in the position you're at. So just because you're at the back of the grid, you're not 18 seconds off the top anymore. You're at the back of the grid. You can start, and you can make some progress. So he, and maybe that's not why he does it, but there is something to be said where if you didn't high side your bike and you can go pick it up and keep riding, it is worth it to do that as long as possible in case something happens. In case, like at least to 50% race distance, because there's a point where they won't red flag it, they'll just
flag the flag like this is it, wherever you are now, that is where you are.
Yeah, that's where you finish. But also there is a flag to flag condition, it could have started raining again. So we've always, if you've been watching MotoGP, you've always seen Mark Marquez do that. And that's exactly what we saw. He had a low side. He clipped the inside of turn four, I think it was, right? Up on the banking, or the candy stripe, which was wet, probably still a puddle in one of those dips. Those are really big dips. If you guys haven't ever walked a racetrack, I think you've seen some decent-sized ones, maybe not. Yeah. But, yeah, at a lot of tracks, they're big old decent dips. They can fill up with inches of water. So, anyway, he went a little bit too far inside. On a normal, warm, sunny day, that would have been fine with the water that was still in there. That's what caused him a low slide. Came back across the track, bust up his fairings.
That was scary, because the fact that he slid through the track, into off track, back into the track.
Yeah.
Luckily he had that 2 second gap, although that could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Picked the bike back up and then went out and raced. And the craziest part.
When he picked it up, I was like, he's about to get back into the points.
I thought so.
I was like,
I thought so. I had accidentally been on Facebook prior to watching, and I saw
rookie move
a picture of him with Delina holding up a three, and I was like, oh shoot, he just did the three perfect weekends. I'm like, well, great, there goes my spoiler. Spoiler alert, that wasn't the spoiler. It must have been just about the sprint or something, I guess. Yeah. So he gets back on the freaking bike. And then you're sitting there, and I watched him like move his foot. I'm like, what is going on? Then the commentators finally mentioned it. Like, he doesn't have a foot peg. That's nuts. And I look, I'm like, yeah, sure enough. He also doesn't have a windshield. And there are some riders that'll like do things and then I guess complain about it later. And then when another rider does the same thing, they're like, oh my goodness, this guy is like Superman out here. So i.e. running without a windshield. I don't know. I've never not had a windshield. I imagine, yes, it is very windy out there. And I imagine being on a MotoGP bike without a windshield is very, very tiring. But someone else came back in without a windshield and was like, they had a cramped neck, I think is what they said. So they were surprised if Mark Marquez wasn't stiff or stuck. Anyway, the craziest part was that this guy goes back out without a foot peg. On the right side. No foot peg. And makes it look like he's riding that bike with a foot peg.
Yeah.
Like completely. In the middle of a turn, I don't know where he was putting his foot.
That's the neat part.
Like,
he wasn't.
I don't know. I saw a meme today that was like, rider coaches and professional racers telling you that you use weight on the pegs to turn the bike. And then it was a picture of Mark Marquez with no foot peg, completely leaned over, or from straight up to completely leaned over on the right side. But like, what weight on the foot peg? Oh, I don't know. Because he also then went out and wasn't immediately in the back and was, in fact, actually kind of racing with a couple of people.
I did see that. I did love watching
almost,
that.
In my opinion, I was like, all right, dude, you're kind of causing a nuisance and possibly being like
unsafe.
Yeah. But I don't think he did anything too crazy. Like I said, I think realistically he was holding out for a red flag, and that's why, because that happened about halfway through, right? I think it was lap either 8 to go or lap 8, one of the two. So I think he was waiting for a red flag. And once we got over half race distance, I think he's like, all right, it's not worth it anymore. But I think he was waiting for a red flag just in case. So he knew if there was a red flag, he still had a chance of coming back and at least getting some points. And Mark Marquez is also one that, like, he...
I didn't have any of that thought process at all.
Yeah, he understands that even one point is one more point. At the end of the year, one point could mean a championship or not.
Yes.
Right? And so any chance that he can get to take that point, he will do it. And that's why, like, there was a specific moment last year where he and Bagnaia wrecked into each other. Both of them were low-sided. Both of them, maybe not, I wasn't there. But Bagnaia just got up and walked away. Marquez got up, ran to the bike, got the bike up, and rode the bike and finished the race on the bike, right? And that, I think, speaks wonders to the caliber of the rider, because Mark will do whatever he can to bring the bike home across the finish line. So, but he didn't this time. Like I said, I think he was just hoping for a red flag. Once we got past that distance, he just brought it into the pits, and that was that, and we didn't hear from Mark again after that. So then Bagnaia ate a hot dog. He carried a great race from there on out. Somehow, like I said, slow burn, but actual slow burn this time. Bagnaia was able to have some great, great pace during the race and kept it up. Alex was nowhere near him. DG was almost maybe near Alex near the end there. And then Alex had a couple, I guess Alex was just kind of hanging out. It seemed like he responded back with a good lap. That's what's crazy to me, is something I've been picking up on big time this year, is like watching a rider that has a gap. And then they don't know until they come across the pits.
See the pit board.
They see the pit board, and then they'll respond back, and the gap goes right back to where it was. And you're like, oh, that guy's literally just been, like, hanging out. And, like, you realize how, especially with, like, Mark, Alex, and Bagnaia, you start to realize how tuned in with their lap time they actually are.
That's crazy. When you think about it, it's like they're doing, like, example 130. Hey, I was like, it used to be half a second when you're doing 130s. Now the guy behind you picked up the pace, it's like 0.2 seconds, and it's like 128.
Yep.
It's like gap gets bigger, then they ease up, and it's like, interesting.
Yeah, it is nuts. It is insane. Because, yeah, you're exactly right. It's like the gap goes down by 0.2, so they do the next lap 2 or 3 tenths faster.
Yeah.
And then the gap goes right back, and you're like, what? And then the gap stays there for a few, and then the other guy backs off. So you see the gap get bigger, and then you watch them come right back to where they were. I was like, we're talking tenths of a second.
Like, how do you calculate that? Like, how do you know, like, if I break, like if I break at this marker, carry this many, like, this much speed, I accelerate at this marker, I turn in, like, where are you finding your, like, how do you fine-tune, like, hundredths and tenths of a second?
The crazy part, I think, to me is that, like, it's all, so it's, theoretically, at that level, it should be all about tire management, right? And then, like, I could go faster, but I got to save my tire for the whole race, I think.
Every lap can't be a qualifying lap for 20 laps.
Yeah, because you run out of tire, which is something that, like, Bastianini, for instance, the Tire Whisperer. There's a couple others that are pretty good. Mark, actually, they don't talk about it very often, but I've seen that guy do some wicked stuff on a tire in the beginning of the race and then still have it at the end. So he doesn't, like, come back from nowhere and put down amazing laps, but he has done some... back in his day, qualified real bad or whatever else, come from the back of the grid, eating through people, and then still able to have a tire at the end of the race, which is pretty impressive. But yeah, you know, where on the track do you, is it braking later, like you said, just a little bit, or is it adding more throttle somewhere, or is it taking a tighter line, or is it actually going wider and carrying more speed? I don't freaking know, They know, and they know down to every tenth of a second. Yeah. It's crazy.
I wish I could take off work for like 6 months and just eat, sleep, and breathe that stuff and just like have a fraction of the understanding or the thought process that could go into that.
Just be at the track every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Why can't that be like my real job?
Well, it could be. You just have to go back in time and
start dirt bikes or something.
Start at like 2 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me to think about that. Made me real sad.
Let's see. Yeah, so race... we kind of talked about everyone already. Bezzecchi also finished sixth, pretty good. Bastianini seventh. Luca Marini, like we mentioned, eighth. Iger in ninth. And Quartararo in tenth. Alex Rins right behind him in 11th. The two Fernandezes, Augusto and Raul. Augusto was in for Oliveira, who's out for surgery or something. But then there were five DNFs, right? So
yeah,
Ferman Aldegaard.
He was doing good before he crashed.
Yeah, that was the other one. That was who I wanted to talk about because he was running like what 202.5s or something, something like low 202s. And
he's one of the rookies they picked up too, right?
Yeah. So a rookie got picked up by Ducati, running with Gresini this year. He's also only 19, and that's what everyone's kind of like going nuts about because Iagura is a little older. Pedro Acosta is not a rookie anymore this year, so he's still going to get talk because he's new. But KTM also doesn't have the bike for him. In fact, that's one thing that the commentators have been mentioning a lot is, like, should Pedro stick around with KTM or should he say deuces if he gets offered a spot somewhere else? He's a good rider. You know, if KTM's not providing him the bike, is it worth staying true? Or should he try and go somewhere else? It's kind of like Quartararo. I don't know if Quartararo got a spot anywhere else, and I think he was getting paid real good money by Yamaha, so when they offered him a 4-year contract or whatever, he's like
say less. Where do I sign?
Yeah. But, you know, is that when you're young, you can, if you stick with a, so even if it's a factory ride where you're making good money, if you stick with it and it's never a good enough bike to do anything, you lose out on the opportunity to look good. So if you look at Mark, he did really well, meaning that now years later, he came back on a Honda, was not doing good. Like, looked bad. He did not look like a good rider. After a big wreck, after he went through his, like, prime time already, he should have been done, realistically. Like, that should have been a career-ending wreck, injury, whatever. I'm not saying that, like, I wish it would have happened, but if you look at timelines of other riders and what's happened to them and stuff like, that should have kind of ended his career. But then Ducati sees him, hears that he's interested in a better working bike, sees the,
we got one of those.
Hey man, this is a 6-time MotoGP world champion. We've seen what he can do. We know our bike works. He can probably ride it. Let's get him over here. Right? So if Pedro spends too long at KTM on a bike that doesn't work, doesn't get to show the world that he is actually worth it. Like right now we're going on like, hey, this guy won a lot of Moto2. Congrats. So did Alex Marquez. So did Raul Fernandez. So did, like, everyone that comes into MotoGP has done a lot in Moto2. So, no offense to...
It's almost a requirement.
Yeah, no offense to Pedro Acosta. I love the guy. He's great. And he did better than a lot of people. But you have to do something in MotoGP if you want to keep
stay
going
in
there.
MotoGP.
Yeah. So, and especially with the regulations
or at
coming
least be
out...
competitive.
Yeah.
Like, have an opportunity for a competitive bike to be competitive down the road.
Right.
Lest you want to settle for backmarker positions.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing, right? Like, if Ducati offers him a spot, should he take it? Should he not? Should he stay true to KTM? I think 100%, like, if you get offered a spot on a bike that is better, especially at that age where you are young.
Yeah, I think you should absolutely take it.
Go for it. Go for it. You know, like,
especially if we're not even sure if KTM's racing pass next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they will be.
I hope so.
They will be. KTM is too big of a name to where, like, KTM might change, like, internally, but someone will buy it.
Yeah. I think there were talks of BMW possibly buying it.
Yeah. Which I haven't read up on that recently.
I'll believe when I see it.
Yeah, I don't have any officials on that, but even if it wasn't BMW, someone would buy them out, most likely. They wouldn't just go under and disappear. They're too big. They're too established. Their issue is they tried to go too big too fast, and I think Austria kind of told them enough of that, but that's all speculation.
Hold up, wait a minute. Too much dip on your chip.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Aldegaard, he got picked up by Gresini, had a pretty good weekend, and then dumped it, which he's a rookie, so he gets that kind of buyout of like, oh, well, he was doing great, still amazing race, even though he dumped it. So that kind of wraps up my MotoGP for the week. I don't know if you saw anything else that I missed.
No, nothing else I wanted to add. Just happy seeing the VR46 finally up there. Not that they were never up there, but like such a consistent performance all weekend, pretty strong. They're just not the bikes that I'm used to seeing up there, and I was happy to see some different colors up that far on the grid.
Yeah, different colors, not a different manufacturer, because I had that thought. I was like, oh man, something. It's not just red and blue up here. And I was like,
no. We went from Ducatis up there to differently colored Ducatis up there.
Yeah, it does. It feels better until you realize what it is. You're like,
anyway, we had a Yamaha, Jack Miller in fifth.
We had a Honda in the top 10. We had an Aprilia in the top 10.
Yeah. I'll always be a Japanese manufacturer guy deep down inside.
There you go. That works. Yeah, no, it was a good Sunday. You know, despite my guy wrecking out. The thing is, it had to happen. This is what I'm telling myself. If you're not a Mark fan, you can turn it off for 30 seconds while I have my pity party. But
is this your copium?
Yeah, right. But it, you know, it had to happen at some point. I'm kind of glad it got out of the way. I'm hoping for two things. One, that kind of knocks him in a gear big time, and he's like, okay, I have to be perfect, actually. Two, it does give Bagnaia just enough boost that we see some dang good racing. We get to prove once and for all that it isn't just sad Bagnaia and better Mark Marquez, but Mark Marquez is actually better than non-sad
Bagnaia. Anyway, maybe, just maybe.
Jorge Martin.
I'm a Jorge Martin stan, but like I'm not going to lie to you. They sent this many races, he'd have to have a perfect season, and then Marquez and both Marquezes would have to like...
He ain't winning a championship.
Retire.
Are you hoping, you're saying Alex, Mark, and Bagnaia are all just fighting each other all the time?
Yeah.
And that makes them so slow that it brings them back down?
No, I'm saying I want those three to be fighting each other the entire time. So down to the wire, it's like it could be either one of these three.
Oh, you're saying you want a three-way run?
Because right now, Alex is in the lead. Granted, it's only by one point.
Yeah, 1 point.
But like that's Alex up there, right?
It's true.
Who's saying that?
It's the first time he has ever led the world... Led the current championship.
Just, like, the way they've been going, they've been top three podiums, just alternating or crashing out. I'm just saying, the mathematically, by the toward the end, depending on how it goes, it could be a nail biter go down toward the end.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of that.
So that is one thing.
If my man can't have it, I don't want anybody to have it prematurely.
That is one possibility that I have definitely been putting around in my head is the Juan Mir championship win for Alex Marquez.
Where you just win off of pure consistency?
Off of, like, I can do seconds and thirds every time. Alex is like, yep, I'll just stick behind my brother because eventually Pecco's going to catch up and knock him out. And they're just going to knock each other out left and right. And
if you tell any manufacturer, I can give you a rider and he'll get consistent seconds or third and he'll bring the bike home every single race, they'd sign him in an instant.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I would sign him in an instant. Yeah. I would sign myself up for that. In an instant. Have you ever won a race? No. Why not? Because I took second in every single race. Okay.
And at MotoGP, when you make mistakes, like that's not like you just go off the track. That could be like you go off the track low side and that bike's not rideable. It's not coming home.
Yeah.
A few people have picked it up and put it back in the points, but that like they're the exception, not the rule.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But stepping away from MotoGP, we got to talk about the JK Moto podcast team's first track day weekend thing of the year that I didn't go to.
Yeah, I wish you were there. It'd be a lot cooler if you were.
Yeah.
But yeah. Hey, we finally got one of the, finally got a friend to go with me.
So your track dad era has began. Have entered your official track dad.
My track dad era? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Did you guys take water?
We did take water, and one of us went faster. Spoiler alert, was not me.
All right. There you go. Drink water, go faster. Heck yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. Got to knock the rust off after all these months. It's like weird to think, but like the whole, even down south, the whole winter for a couple months, still not riding, still not as long as some other places, but it's still a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's been since, what, November was the last time?
Yeah.
Did you go after Texas, or Texas was?
Texas was it.
Yeah. You were supposed to go in February or something like that.
But I don't think I was making that February date. Okay. There was too much stuff to do behind the scenes to like get ready for it, that I was like, yeah, I'll just wait till March.
So my question is, Texas, and if you guys don't know, we were down in Texas last fall at MSRH with Josh Bittinger doing some training down there. Did some mini moto training, a little bit of dirt training. It was kind of just more like dirt fun, but still training. Probably good, really good experience for you. And then we were out on the track for 2 days, one dry, one wet. So I'm very curious to know, that was November, it's now March. But that was also the last thing you did. How much do you think that actually helped you translating back to a different track now?
I think it helped, but just because, like, he has a bunch of cool stuff to learn. He has a little bit of practice. He has, like, 3 to 4 months of not riding at all or on the track at all in that kind of environment. And then going back, it's like, it's one of those things in the back of your head is like, oh, yeah, some of these new things exist. But if you're not consciously trying to, like, remember and do those things, I just think I haven't been doing long enough to have, like, the muscle memory for it.
Okay.
But I think, like, if you make a conscious effort to, like, practice that in the meantime, I do think it would seriously help. I just think 3 or 4 months of just not being in a track environment, it takes a real conscious effort to, like, get back into that mindset. But there's definitely some things I did notice myself doing now, like, in general, just in terms of, like, normal riding based off stuff that I learned in Texas.
Okay. That makes sense. So I guess my reason for that question is, like, if you're going to plan yourself some coaching or something like that where you're working on something or trying to learn something new, would it be better to hold that off until your next year and do it at the beginning, or is it okay to do it in the winter?
I think it's better to do it, period.
Okay.
But if you had to schedule when you did, I do think it'd be more beneficial to do it closer to when you do the majority of your riding.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's kind of what I thought. I haven't been back out there yet. It'll be actually be like a full 6 months for me before I get back out. So it'll be kind of interesting. That being said, I've got a few more years of track experience.
A few more years of riding experience too, along with a few.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I do always forget that you like hit the road once, you're like, all right, racetrack, let's go. Mm-hmm. which is different, but it's awesome. It's awesome. So, but let's see, you took the R7 out because the ZX6 was having battery issues.
That's my fault. User error.
Yeah. New track sun dude was on.
Was that H2, the naked version? ZH2? There we go.
ZH2.
That thing's wicked.
It is a
heck It's of, heavy, but it's I love it.
It's a heck of a bike to take to the track or to do anything.
He finally gets to stretch his legs.
Yeah. How did he enjoy it?
Oh, he loved it. I definitely think that he's a reoccurring customer.
Okay, good deal. Good deal, good deal. That's the hard part is getting them there. Once you get them there, I don't think it's that hard to convince them.
He picked up a set of those, the Pirellis, the Diablo Rosso. I think he had two or threes.
Threes probably, but.
I forget which one he had, but he enjoyed the track. He enjoyed those tires. He enjoyed the bike.
Awesome.
It's better than in the street because, like, when are you really getting to, like, open the throttle on that thing?
Yeah, especially a bike like that. If you guys don't know.
Especially with our roads.
Yeah. The audience, ZH2 Ninja. Not Ninja, Kawasaki ZH2. The H2, everyone knows what that is, a supercharged, crazy superbike thing. The Z is just the naked version of that. Has a little bit less horsepower, a little bit more torque on the bottom end.
A little bit less. Yeah. Still a high triple digit number.
Yeah. It's a lot of bike. It's a lot of bike for sure. It's a ZX10 with a supercharger on it, which is insane.
ZX10's already insane.
Yeah. I can't imagine that. Anyway, we'll get the old track son on here sometime and debrief the trip.
He should be, maybe. We'll see if he can show up to that, was that May?
When we go back. We'll be going back late May. So, well, that's cool. So you got the rust kind of knocked off. That was 2 days at CMP, Carolina Motorsports Park. Felt like it was just rust knocking off, but also maybe like a good year-to-year comparison.
Oh, yeah. Compared to where I went to CMP for the first time last year, and I was, like, going around, like, damn near 40 miles an hour on that track. I didn't know anything, right? I had the guy show me the lines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I opened up full throttle at any point. Whereas now it's, like, now I feel like I've seen the limitations of the R7, at least on the straights. So it's, like, yep, this is all I get. And then I'm still getting used to, like, getting more and more lean angle for faster and faster corners.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely better than last year with just better cleaned up lines. I'd be curious to see what that looks like next year again.
Heck yeah.
After it's like more intense, serious, like focus, like training and goal setting. Like, hey.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. So I have only been to CMP once, and that was also when I first got out here, which was probably a year before you went, roundabouts. Yeah, because it was in April-ish, I think. Maybe March. Anyway, of like 2023. So I'll be heading back there, having only been there once before.
After a 2 year, you'll be fine. Yeah. You'll pick it up.
It'll be okay. That's kind of what I do. That's another video that you could be looking out for on the track. We're going to go over the top 5 things that'll make you faster on the racetrack. Be putting that video out. I'm kind of excited about it because I don't think it's going to surprise some people, and some people are going to get real butthurt about what makes them faster.
Vision.
Good diet and exercise.
Nah.
A good night's rest.
Nah. 3 hours of sleep, day one, baby. Zach, surprise, you're tired at the track. How could this have happened? I mean, it's a bad... my first day, I had some bad work planning, so I ended up showing up to the track on 3 hours of sleep, and I was like, I do not recommend that.
Yeah, I wouldn't...
Don't do that. But
that being said, usually you get enough adrenaline, but you're okay.
That drive home was rough.
Yeah, I would. You're still crazy for driving home, too. Track is too far away to be driving home and back every day.
It's only 2.5 hours away.
Dude, that's 5 hours of driving in a day. If you're doing a weekend.
Oh, you say it like that. Well, you say it like that. It seems terrible.
Put a freaking sleeping bag in the back of the van.
I didn't have a van. Took my car out there.
Okay, put the seat down. Lean back.
There's not a whole lot of lean back in that car. You've seen it.
I guess, yeah. Get a tent.
That's what I should do.
Yeah.
That's the meta.
Yeah.
I'd be more well rested. That's true. Yeah, but now I know. Now I know better, right? Now I know better.
Sure. Yeah. Anyway.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
All right. Well, the moral of that story, Mark Marquez is not the king of COTA. It's just not possible.
He's won this decade in COTA.
He's lost as many years as he's won at this point. He wasn't there for like three of them, but and two of them were. That's the funny part is the commentators like to. It was a mechanical issue. It was a this issue. This one was just him.
I feel the commentators will say anything.
Yeah, they will. I mean, they have to talk. I love when they like as soon as they found out, they got like someone sent them the word, "Hey, Alex Marquez will be leading the championship after this if it ends how it is right now." And they're like that. They wouldn't shut up about it. And I was like, okay, we get it. He's 1 point ahead on the third round.
This might be an unpopular opinion, but I do think the F1 commentators are better.
F1 sucks. MotoGP is where it's at. That's where we're going to end.
Fair enough.
It's track season.
No
it's
more
gotta
F1
be club
propaganda.
Racing season. MotoAmerica is also right around the corner, like literally in a week. Not even this weekend.
We got to go to one of those.
Down at Road Atlanta. Not Road Atlanta. Sorry. Barber Motorsports Park. So keep an eye on that. Root for your people. And we will see you guys next week for another episode with the special guest, Steve. And I'll leave it at that. Thanks for being here. Once again, please subscribe to the channel. We'll see you guys in the next episode.
Ground at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Just don't touch my freaking bike.
I love it.
Okay, it doesn't give you the right to just touch it.
You're right. I do apologize.
Okay.
Please, can I touch your bike?
No.
I.
If you aren't willing to ride it, you cannot touch the bike.
I'd ride it. At some point.